Saturday, July 13th.
In Europe again today,
German and British bombing planes have exchanged raids. German planes, after raiding England yesterday, extended their attacks into Scotland and Wales during the night. British planes again sought objectives in Germany and German-held territory. Italy claims Britain's lifeline in the Mediterranean is cut, and the British fleet bottled up.
But there is no confirmation of such reports anywhere else. Now the news from Europe, direct.
Berlin and London. First, Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin.
Good morning. This is Berlin. According to reports in the German papers today, the French Chamber and Senate have expressed a desire to meet their side at future headquarters. But this proposal has been vetoed by Marshal Pétain and Pierre Laval. The German government has not yet come to a definite opinion regarding the question of the French government moving to Paris. It was announced at the Foreign Office press conference here this morning. The new French cabinet has been announced, the first under the new authoritarian regime. It is headed by Marshal Pétain, who becomes head of the state, succeeding Albert Lebrun as president, in addition to continuing on as prime minister. Pierre Laval as vice premier. Other members of this cabinet are André Marquet as minister of the interior, Alabert as minister of justice, Admiral Darlan remaining on as minister of marine, General Vagon as minister of defense, Epinier as minister of finance, and Paul Baudouin as minister of foreign affairs. A new cabinet post created by Pétain, Ministry for Youth and Family, it is headed by John Ibanez Gary, a writer of the former Chamber of Deputies. Some of the conflict and irritation caused by the occupation of France by German troops has come to the surface. According to a story in the Berlin Boston Zeitung this morning, the newspaper Nouvelliste of Lyon has been critical of the occupation of that city. And the Boston Zeitung snaps back with this comment. Quote, the small hours for the new release should be warned once and for all. It would be very dangerous to mistake German generosity as a sign of weakness. We have forgotten or forgiven nothing. And we are well aware of the possibilities of shutting the vicious mouth of those offending the victorious German armed forces. End of quote. The commentator Silex in the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung this morning gives his reader a between the halves discussion of the objections. The result of the combined German U-boat and airplane attacks on British shipping. This phase of the war does not excite the interest of the amateur observer as much as it does the professional interest of neutral and enemy military and naval people, he says. According to his statement and the official claims, the German submarines have thus far accounted for approximately 2 million tons of enemy shipping. German superplanes and bombers have sunk another 1 million tons, or a total of 235 ships. And another 1,400,000 tons have been sunk by surface craft and shore fire. The success of Germany is due to the fact that the strategy is not guided by the orthodox and conventional methods of warfare, nor does it avoid taking risks, Silex says. The great amount of space devoted to the reports of aerial warfare over England, the visitor Bill Bacher adds this comment, quote, we are now serving bombs at the 5 o'clock English tea hour. And then, in speaking of the interim period between armistice in France and the start of the war against England, this paper says, quote, the battle zone of England stretches horizontally from Narvik to Brest, and vertically all the airspace over England. And in that space are now hovering the messengers of battle to come. Standing as silent as he always is before battle, the surrounding world holds its breath as it has finally learned what this silence means. And then this pre-game fight talk carries this offer. Quote, England has a chance to become a European state, become a useful member of the European continent, as all the people and the culture talk to you. But she has always preferred to look for a future in the wide world and found her wealth on an overseas empire. End of quote. The New York correspondent of the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung has a long detailed story today explaining to German leaders the processes of the American Political Party Convention. The correspondent gives his own impressions and expresses his surprise that any business is accomplished in what he describes as the carnival-like jumble of flags, speakers, and shouting delegates. Then he adds this cryptic and unusual comment, quote, some bold spirit saying that the old America is dead, the old America which liked to lie in bed between tobacco, end of quote. This is Edwin Hartridge, our attending out of Columbia, New York.
This is New York. Here's the latest news from Rome.
An official communique today claims that Italian airplanes have blasted the British fleet in the Mediterranean and struck repeatedly at one battleship and two cruisers with heavy bombs. This follows on the heels of Italy's claims that Britain's fleet has been bottled up, badly beaten, and the British Empire lifeline in the Mediterranean cut. Now back to Europe for more news. News reported from the British capital by Columbia's correspondent. Go ahead, London. This is Columbia in New York calling Columbia's correspondent in London. Go ahead, London. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we had hoped to present the latest news from London reported by Columbia's correspondent. Obviously, up to this time, we've been unable to contact our correspondent, and we give you now the latest news from London, received at Columbia's newsroom in New York. German air raiders, steadily increasing the fury of their attacks, extended their bombings to Scotland and Wales today, in addition to continuing their campaign against England in apparent preparation for a blitzkrieg invasion attempt. After bombing England heavily during the day, the German planes, coming in relays, attacked southeast and southwest Scotland and various areas in Wales, doing considerable damage. Some of the German planes dropped their entire bomb loads at one time in order to race for home before British fighter planes arrived to challenge them. 11 German bombers had been shot down in the last 24 hours, and 48 bombers and fighters had been shot down in the last 72 hours. A communique of the Air Ministry and Home Security Ministry said, during the night, enemy aircraft dropped bombs on a few districts in North and East England, Scotland, and Wales. Some houses were damaged, but casualties were not numerous, although some persons were killed. One German plane dropped 3 bombs in a municipal housing area in southwest Scotland, wrecking a 3-story apartment building and causing numerous casualties. Reports indicated that the Germans had dropped both high-explosive and incendiary bombs on southeast and southwest Scotland, but had concentrated on incendiary attacks in northeast Scotland. The German attacks were costly ones, the Air Ministry said, claiming that 9 bombers had been shot down yesterday by British Spitfire and Hurricane fighter planes, that a 10th was shot down by a plane of the Coastal Command, and that the 11th was shot down by anti-aircraft gunfire. In addition, numerous German planes had been damaged. 4 bombers of a squadron of 10 which attacked a shipping convoy off the east coast of England were shot down. Later, 2 bombers attacked the same convoy, and 1 was shot down and the other damaged. 1 plane of 3 which attacked other shipping was shot down in flames. Spitfires downed a big Heinkel bomber over Aberdeenshire, Scotland. There seemed growing confidence in the efficiency of Britain's defense against air raids, and belief was expressed that if Germany lost so many planes in comparatively minor attacks, she might find it difficult to keep replacing crews in a big-scale action. British planes continued their daily attacks on German bases in France, Belgium, Holland, and Germany. Barge concentrations, seaplanes, and harbor works were damaged in a raid on Boulogne, France. Aerodromes were bombed in Holland. Munitions works, blast furnaces, and other military objectives were bombed in Germany. Authorities extended a coastal curfew to a large part of the Yorkshire coast today. Inhabitants of the area must remain indoors between half an hour after sunset and half an hour before sunrise. Detailing the most recent raids on German bases, the Air Ministry said that heavy bombers attacked Rauhaven Aerodrome, Holland, for 2 hours, causing many fires, blasted runways and damaged buildings at Schiphol Airport, dropped more than 100 bombs, high explosives and incendiary on Texel Island Air Base, Holland, and bombed the Hamstad, Holland Aerodrome. This has been the news reported from London, received at Columbia's newsroom in New York. Now here in our New York studios, we'll hear more news and an analysis by Linton Wells. Mr. Wells.
As you have heard, the Italians are making unsubstantiated claims of sensational victories in the Mediterranean. Virginio Guida, the Italian editorialist, says that the British fleet is now isolated and England can no longer receive supplies from the Balkans and Near East. Italy, he says, also has cut off communications between England and various parts of her empire. This, of course, is the alleged result of a 5-day naval battle between the British fleet and the Italian naval and air forces, which is said to be continuing, and is diametrically opposite of British claims, which insist that the Italian fleet has been forced into cover and that Italian air attacks have been repelled. The probability is that the Italian claims are far less accurate than the British. Reports from Turkey and the Near East confirm the fact that Britain still controls the eastern Mediterranean and Suez Canal lifeline to the east, while for several months communications between England and other parts of the empire have been maintained by way of the Cape of Good Hope route, which is still under British control.
In East Africa, the Italians appear to be continuing their siege of Muyale on the frontier between Ethiopia and Kenya colony, to the relief of which the British are rushing reinforcements. And northeast of there, in Italian Eritrea, British flying columns are reported to be effectively hammering away at Italian garrisons and troop concentrations. While the British land forces in East Africa are unquestionably superior to those of Italy, British weakness there lies in her air force, which is relatively small and for the most part comprises obsolete planes. Yesterday, the British government made a thrust at the weak spot in Mussolini's East African armor, namely Ethiopia. The Emperor Haile Selassie was formally recognized as a full ally against Germany and Italy, and in return for his promised support, the Lion of Judah is to be restored to his independent throne, if and when the Italians are defeated, of course. Last September, I was on the Ethiopian frontier, and during the Italo-Ethiopian War 4 years ago, I spent 6 months in Ethiopia. I know that the barbarous Ethiopian natives have never reconciled themselves to Italian domination and never will. Since Italy entered the war 5 weeks ago, the British and French appear to have been doing their utmost to start an uprising in Ethiopia. But unfortunately, they have not been able to provide a leader. Now, apparently, tough little Haile Selassie has been persuaded to resume the leadership of as courageous an aggregation of fighters as there are on Earth, who need only modern arms to back up their fighting prowess and make them an enemy to be reckoned with. For several years now, Haile Selassie has been living in retirement at Bath, England. He has been so poor that he had to ride the buses. He has no reason to love either England or France. If they had supported him during the Italo-Ethiopian War, he would still be on his throne, and the odds are better than even that there would be no war in Europe at this moment. But England and France let Ethiopia down, and Haile Selassie had to flee for his life. Later, the two nations recognized Italian claims to Ethiopia, and British courts even went so far as to deny Haile Selassie's claims to Ethiopian money and turned it over to Mussolini, hence the poverty-stricken state of the Negus. It is not clear whether Haile Selassie is to be transported to East Africa so he can rally his followers and lead them personally against the Italians, but the chances are that he will be. But it may be that England's conversion has come too late. I know Haile Selassie, and I know the direct-minded Ethiopians. For thousands of years, they've done their fighting in the open. They cannot understand and therefore resent England's failure to support them during the Italian invasion, which began on October 2, 1935. Nearly a half million of their kinsmen were killed by Italian bombs and poison gas. Some 9 million others lost freedom, which had been maintained for 5,000 years, and each subsequent attempt at rebellion has been ruthlessly put down by the Italians. For all this, they blame the Italians less than they do England. So it might be wise for the British not to rely too much on Haile Selassie and the Ethiopians as allies, at least until they are able to figure out which way the wind is likely to blow. From the Far East come reports that drastic changes will be made in the Japanese government next week. If true, they afford little consolation to the United States, England, France, and Holland. It is indicated that a fascist state is to be set up in Japan with Prince Konoye at its head, functioning under direct orders from the Japanese military. The new government, it is said, will strengthen its ties with Rome and Berlin, thus ending Japan's non-involvement in the European war and take more direct action against Occidental possessions in the Far East. Some observers do not eliminate the possibility of a blunt Japanese order to Britain, France, and Holland to place their territorial holdings under Japanese protective custody or to prepare to resist Japanese military right, even over American objections.
And with this analysis by Linton Wells, Columbia brings to a close another broadcast of important European developments. In this broadcast, you heard Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin. We had hoped to bring you a report from London in this broadcast, but we were unable to hear the London channel at that time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.